Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. He is Mike McDaniel. Mike, it's been a few weeks.
It has.
But I don't know that there's really been a whole lot of time in those few weeks where we have either A, had time, or B, been in physical condition to record a podcast. So
yeah,
here we are. How are you doing? You ready to go?
I am doing better than I was. I've had bronchitis for 2 weeks, and it's been really, really kicking my ass. So didn't record basically the week after Super Bowl. I know the week leading up to Super Bowl, we hit record. Mm-hmm. Week after Super Bowl, I was too sick. This past week, I was still kind of recovering. And then we had plans to record late in the week last week. I got busy at work. So basically what I'm saying is this is all my fault, but we're back.
Well, I mean, we're both busy men. There's been a lot going on that I'm sure you all will hear about in future episodes. But There has been a lot going on. There's, you know, nothing really to spoil here. Nothing that really impacts anybody else, but just busy time in life for the both of us. We'll say that.
Yes. Yeah. We're just busy.
That's
right. Happens.
Busy people. And it turns out this is not our full-time job. So sometimes other things can take precedent. But Mike, we are back. We are here to continue talking ACC football. And if you're listening to this and at this point you're thinking, what on earth are we going to talk about? Because it's almost March. There's been basically nothing that's happened since we last talked.
Right.
Mike, the thing we got to talk about is probably what's people are seeing in the title of the episode. You and I have a couple of, we'll call them hot takes, some off-season hot takes about a couple of ACC programs that we need to get to tonight.
Yes, at least lukewarm takes in a couple of cases.
Yeah, definitely lukewarm takes at minimum.
Maybe cold takes even, Joey. they might end up being cold takes.
One or two of them. Quite possible. Yeah. Quite possible.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Mike, this kind of stemmed from something that I would say you did a little bit of freelancing on. I believe it was in our last episode where you outed me for having a bit of a hot take as it related to Virginia. And so we promised the people that if they reminded us that we would start the next episode with that take. And so Here we are. You reminded us. We have not forgotten, and I'm not shying away from it.
Well, I got a question for you, Joey.
Yes, Mike.
What is that take?
What is that take? So I felt like I needed to try to be as specific as possible about this. It's not a good take if I say, you know, someone is bad.
Yeah, don't skip Bayless.
Super vague. Know. Yeah, no. We're going to be specific here, Mike.
Good.
Here's my take about Tony Elliott at Virginia. I believe he's going to be fired within 4 years.
Hell yeah.
I believe that it is not going to work out for Tony Elliott at Virginia.
And he hasn't coached a game yet, and we've come to that conclusion.
Hasn't coached a game, has really hardly been responsible for a recruiting class at this point. There is no empirical evidence that I have to point to that supports this take. We'll start there.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And we were very wrong about the last guy.
Abundantly
clear. We were both very, very wrong about Bronco Mendenhall.
Very wrong. Yes. Very much so. And here's the other thing too, is I have nothing against Tony Elliott. There is no part of me that wants to see him fail here. I would love for him to succeed. He seems like a great dude. He's an industrial engineer just like me, Mike.
Yeah, the whole thing you just said about not wanting to see him fail, that makes one of us. As a Virginia Tech alum. Yeah. Nothing against Tony Elliott, the man, though.
No, that's, of course.
Make that clear.
I understand where you're coming from.
I just want to make sure our audience understands where I'm coming from. Not total scumbag.
Of course. Yeah. That's my thing, Mike, is I believe that Tony Elliott's going to fail here. Now, let me show my work here. Here's what I'm thinking.
Yes, please show your work.
Let's start with this. Virginia, historically, objectively, is a hard job.
It is.
You go back and look over the last, 75 years or so of that program, there have been a lot more coaches that have failed there than have succeeded and won.
Yeah.
There have been kind of a few select teams that seem to have been able, or a few select coaches that seem to have been able to succeed there. But there's a pretty clear dichotomy of guys that either definitively succeeded there or definitively did not. And prior to Bronco Mendenhall being there, and I mean, did pretty well there in his last 4 years or so. I mean, Mike London had a really rough go of it. Al Groh was okay for a few years and then really struggled after that. George Welsh was one of the guys that was really good for an extended period. And then prior to him, I mean, it was like decades in the dumps. I mean, it's clearly it is a job that for whatever reason is a difficult one. And it is not there's not an obvious path to success there. And this is something too, Mike, that we'll just go ahead and plug this right now. I want our next episode to be the Virginia Tell Us About Your Team episode.
Okay. Yep.
I am unloading this take in anticipation of that episode, but I want to use that episode to try to understand better why is this such a hard job. So hopefully more on that to come. But yes, A, hard job, and B, now you've got Tony Elliott coming in to do it as a first-time head coach.
Yeah, and not the most impressive staff I've ever seen assembled either.
Yeah, and that's the other piece, man, is like Tony Elliott coming in as a first-time head coach. He's a relatively young guy, pretty well-regarded, I think, as a coach. But look at his assistants and the staff that he brings in. This isn't going to really win a lot of fans, but the staff in a lot of ways reminds me of the staff that Jeff Collins hired when he first started at Georgia Tech.
Right.
There's a whole lot of guys who have not really coached at the Power 5 level within a lot of reason. A lot of younger guys, folks that are lesser experienced folks, which I think to me is part of the real contrast with Bronco Mendenhall and his staff was he brought a lot of guys from BYU that have been doing this and succeeding for a number of years.
Right.
And so it's kind of the inexperienced piece. You look at two coordinators that have a combined 1 year of co-coordinator experience at the Power 5 level. It's similar to Georgia Tech. He brought in Dave Patnode and Andrew Thacker, who had combined for no experience at the Power 5 level as coordinators and calling plays and all that. It's just, this is tough. They have guys, I think, that maybe will recruit fairly well, but that's just part of the battle. And there's more to it that put that all on top of a difficult job. I do not think this is a recipe for success the way that it is currently constituted. That is my concern with this staff and this head coach in particular. Again, it's nothing personal. Just I don't think this recipe right now is a great one. And I'll add too, and then I'll let you talk, Mike.
No problem.
I'll add as well. It's not like from a roster situation that they are really in position to be shot out of a cannon to start with here. There has been a number of guys that have exited this program in the last maybe 3 months or so. They had a number of seniors and old folks that were graduating anyways that, were moving on that have been a big, big contributors to this program over the last couple of years. I just don't know that this is a formula for success as I'm currently seeing it.
And I think that's a fine take. I will say that, you mentioned the UVA Georgia Tech connection, that you're seeing here. How about UVA and Virginia Tech? Just so UVA fans don't think I'm just like going to sit here and, talk trash all over UVA because I am a Tech alum.
Mm-hmm.
Objectively speaking, I just watched this in Blacksburg. Mm-hmm. I just watched a coaching staff put together by Justin Fuente for a 6-year period with guys who did not have Power 5 experience. And it did not go very well.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go well on the recruiting trail. It didn't go well on field. There were a lot of, decisions and execution issues that Virginia Tech had over the 6 years that Justin Fuente was the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that UVA won't recruit well, because I do think the staff that they have is a much better recruiting staff than the one Justin Fuente put together.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, it might be a better recruiting staff than the one Jeff Collins put together. I thought Jeff Collins had a pretty decent recruiting staff when he first started at Georgia Tech. I didn't think that was going to be the issue. I thought they would recruit fine. Mm-hmm. And they have, for the most part. They've recruited okay. So I think UVA could be on par with Georgia Tech, or maybe a little bit better recruiting, and be in a much better spot than Virginia Tech was when Justin Fuente got there from a recruiting standpoint. It's not that. It's the on-field experience part. That's what I have an issue with too. There's not a hire that they've made where I'm like, yeah, that's a really, really good hire. You talked about the co-OC experience and having guys who haven't coached at the P5 level as your main coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
That's a concern that I have for Virginia Tech staff too, where Chris Marv's a young defensive coordinator who has coached linebackers at Florida State, but other than that, he's never been a coordinator before. Mm-hmm. But they have a defensively minded head coach and probably maybe they figure it out. Maybe that's how they close the gap. But that's a concern I have for Virginia Tech too. So, you know, there's some similarities there,
mm-hmm.
but the where they kind of break with this new staff with Brent Pry and what Elliott's done at Virginia is Brent Pry went out and got an offensive line coach, Joe Rudolph, who was coach offensive lineman at Wisconsin and has sent multiple guys to the pros
mm-hmm.
on the offensive line. Show me that guy on the Virginia staff.
Yeah, the
I don't see
kind of silver bullet can't miss guy.
The can't miss guy, the one where it's like, oh my God, they did not have that on the last staff,
mm-hmm.
right? And that doesn't mean Pry's going to succeed. I have no idea what he's going to do. And also, it doesn't mean Elliott's not going to succeed, what we're saying, which we prefaced it with that off the top. But on paper, I've been really unimpressed with the hires by Tony Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Really unimpressed. I thought that Elliott would be able to bring more assistance from Clemson. Now, UVA fans are going to say, okay, well, like that's hard. That's Dabo. Like, he's not going to be able to pull guys. Brett Venables is pulling assistance from Dabo's staff. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Clemson in a few minutes, but Venables is doing it. Why didn't they follow Tony Elliott? Why didn't he pull more guys from that Clemson staff?
I mean, if you want a real answer to that question, if you want to rank the budgetary capabilities of Clemson versus Oklahoma versus Virginia, it's a
right,
little different,
yeah.
You know, but
right. Of course. Of course. But you can't get a few lower level assistants from Clemson. That's coming through your ranks of Dabo to follow you. A
couple grad assistants or quality, you know, QA guys,
quality control guys. Yeah. Yeah. Something.
Mm-hmm.
But, and maybe it's a budgetary restriction thing. Right. I mean, there was a lot of talk about that when, and maybe we should be taking it a little bit easier on Tony Elliott because of that, right? Because the one thing that was being reported, or at least rumored, when Tony Elliott was going back and forth with UVA during contract negotiations was, what's my salary pool going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
What's the infrastructure of the program going to look like, right? That's am I going point. To get a new football practice facility, right? Am I going to get improvements to the locker room, right? And, you know, nutrition and whatever else Elliott was vouching for. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the same day that Tony Elliott signed the contract, Virginia announced infrastructure improvements to the football program, right? Mm-hmm. That finally, that had been lingering for a while when Mendenhall was still there. And it finally got done the day that Elliott signed his contract. That's not a coincidence, right?
I was going to say, so, not even close.
Not even close. So read the tea leaves, right? I'm sure that was a stipulation that Elliott had. He says, you know, if I'm leaving Clemson, right? If I'm leaving Dabo Swinney, I'm going out on my own. You need to give me a shot to succeed here, right? And he felt good enough eventually to make that jump.
Mm-hmm.
But I do wonder from a staff resources standpoint if Virginia is a little bit behind the eight ball. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia Tech was behind the eight ball for a while. They had a big fundraising initiative. Now they're putting together a staff that in numbers compares to SEC schools like Georgia. Virginia Tech now has bigger football staff in terms of quality control assistants and recruiting staff, a bigger staff than Georgia, who just won the national championship. They never had anywhere close to that before. And I know UVA doesn't have anywhere close to that now. I do wonder if staffing from a financial standpoint is still a hurdle that UVA needs to kind of get over with Tony Elliott. I do wonder if maybe that's why the assistants that he's hired haven't been as impressive. I think it's a point that we got to bring up here because, yeah, the staff's not that impressive, but also how much of that is on Tony Elliott, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is a financial resource constraint thing? I think that's the question. That's what we need to consider here.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great point is in a way it makes you wonder, okay, so if Tony Elliott was clearly pushing back on this job opportunity off of what mm-hmm. he was going to be offered from an assistant salary standpoint or whatever,
right?
And he clearly got something that he was asking for, or at least, you know, closer to what he was asking for
mm-hmm.
and it resulted in this staff being hired. what was he being offered initially? Like, who was he going to be able to bring in if he hadn't pushed back on it? Like, my goodness.
Right. And you'll remember, Joey, like, he flew to Charlottesville.
Mm-hmm. Like, with his family.
He met with Carla Williams, the athletic director.
It looked like a formality.
And then you know what he did? He flew back to Clemson.
He bailed.
He flew back to Clemson with no signed contract. Everybody on earth, Pete Thamel, right? Then he was at Yahoo then. He's at ESPN now. Pete Thamel, one of the premier college football reporters in the sport, thought it was a formality and was shocked. He was shocked when Elliott got back on the plane and flew to Clemson. Flew back to Clemson with no deal. And everybody's talking about, all right, what does UVA do now? Right? That was conversation there for a 24-hour period. Lo and behold, the infrastructure thing, you know, the funding gets fixed and or gets passed, approved, whatever, and then Elliott signs a contract, and here we are. But it does make you wonder. It does make you wonder, from a staffing perspective, where is UVA at? I mean, I think they're certainly, you know, behind the eight ball a bit. I mean, I think they certainly need to improve, right? If they want to become the football school that a lot of the fans want them to be, a lot of the diehards listening to this podcast who are going to be screaming at their radios or, you know, iPhones or whatever, Androids listening to this podcast, they're going to be screaming at us. Mm-hmm. Those are the diehards at UVA that want this program to take it to the next level. But how committed is the athletic department to taking the program to the next level? I think signing and getting the infrastructure improvements approved is a really good start.
It is.
I think it's a really, really good start. Where does UVA go from here? Now that's a broader question, but I mean, there are certainly investments in the football program now that we have not seen historically at UVA. And I think that's a big reason why, and we'll figure it out in the Ask About Your Team series too. But I think the part of it that we're still trying to figure out is, how long has this been a problem for UVA, and how much catching up do they have to do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can answer some of those questions, but
yep.
I think it's worth considering.
Couple other things here that I'll mention before we move on. One thing to consider as well, you mentioned Carla Williams. This is something else that our friend Kelly Quinlan has talked about with Georgia Tech and Jeff Collins, and where that's gone sour is perhaps Jeff Collins not getting all the right support that he should be getting, just like on a, call it like a personal, like professional level, from Todd Stansberry, the athletic director. Talking about things like, you know, the way that he's messaging certain things, you know, it's less program administration necessarily, but there's some of these things as a first-time head coach that, you know, none of these things may seem really immediately obvious, that the AD can step in and kind of help to coach or help to put the right people around you to make sure that you're getting the right guidance that you need as a head coach. Carla Williams, first-time athletic director, first-time hiring a head coach in football, like, she comes from Georgia, so she's seen what a, you know, reasonably high functioning program looks like up close. But does she have the experience and the know-how to make sure she is supporting Tony Elliott in the way that he will need to be supported? I don't know. Just and again, nothing against Carla Williams, nothing to say she can't, but just something hasn't really had to do in the past.
People were real quick to criticize Carla Williams, which I don't know. Right, wrong, and different, I have no idea from a negotiation standpoint, but people were real quick to criticize Carla Williams when Tony Elliott was on his way back to Clemson without his deal signed, right? Mm-hmm. Without the contract signed and everything done. I mean, Carla Williams received a hell of a lot of backlash on social media for not being able to get that done. But like, you had it at the 1 yard line. How could you have screwed this up? And a lot of the reason why, and ended up working out fine, but a lot of the reason why was because nobody knew what UVA's second option was, right?
Mm-hmm.
There were rumors they were pursuing Anthony Poindexter, who is an assistant at Penn State. They're talking about, you know, him coming back to Charlottesville, becoming first-time head coach, and he was going to be a guy, right? He was gonna be the guy. He said, no, I'm going back to Penn State, and here comes Tony Elliott. You're like, okay, great. They're going to hire Tony Elliott. And then he goes back to Clemson, and everybody's like, what the hell is UVA going to do now?
Yeah, what is happening?
Poindexter's saying, yeah, you got a guy, you got an alum who said no thanks, who's now staying in Happy Valley, turned it down as his first head coaching job. He said, this isn't the right opportunity for me. He's an alum who said that. That's, come on, right? That's a red flag, right? And then you have Elliott at the one guard line. It didn't look like that was going to get done. He goes back to Charlottesville. And now what the hell is Carla Williams going to do? Mm-hmm. Bronco kind of retires out of thin air. And now nobody has any idea what UVA is going to do. Okay, so now do you go Mike Elko? Do you go, you know, I don't know. It's all just, it's crazy how it all worked out.
She got it done. Credit to her for that. But again, you know, where does it go from here? You know, who's to say?
Oh, yeah.
Last thing that I'll mention on Tony Elliott, and I was thinking about this as you were talking about Brent Pry, and why would I give Brent Pry the benefit of the doubt that I'm maybe not giving Tony Elliott? I think the one thing that in my mind separates them in particular as candidates is Brent Pry over the last several years has run some really, really good defenses consistently. And we have talked on this show about how Clemson's offense since Jeff Scott left a couple of years ago, since it became totally under Tony Elliott, is not entirely the same. And this year in particular, coming off this past season, they were bad at times. And we agreed, you know, this isn't purely a Tony Elliott issue, but he's part of the problem. Like,
yeah, certainly.
And so, if nothing else, do I trust Brent Pry to put together a team that's going to play pretty good to really good defense? Yes. Do I trust Tony Elliott to put together a team that's going to play, you know, good to really good offense? Not exactly. Not at this point.
Well, you don't have the athletes that you had at Clemson.
That's right. Yeah, you had a massive talent advantage and still struggled on offense for a lot of last year. Like, how, why, like...
I mean, it took Clemson until around November to really start getting it rolling offensively. Like, the offense looked better, I'd say, the last, like, 4 or 5 weeks of the year, but it took them a while to get that going. Well,
my question is, what does it mean to really get it rolling at that point for Clemson? I mean, they finally started scoring 30 points a game. Like,
yeah, right. You know, right.
That wasn't a real high-octane offense, I wouldn't say. It wasn't Ohio
State. Not compared to what we've been seeing.
Yeah,
in recent years, that was not what I mean. Running game wasn't very good. Passing game was very, very bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just in general, a mess.
Yep. So that's my take on Tony Elliott at Virginia. I believe it's going to fail, and those are some of the reasons why. I am not hoping for it to fail. I don't want it to fail, but I'm looking at this entire picture and looking the way that it all fits in at the University of Virginia and what that football program has historically been and how it has been historically for coaches to try to win there. And I don't see a formula for success. And so I've been wrong before. I've been wrong about the Virginia job before. Again, like, you know, what do I know? I could be wrong. And, you know, maybe in 3 or 4 years he is gone, but it's because he's being hired to something bigger and better because he's done so well there. I don't know. We'll find out. But for now, I think it's going to be a failure.
I mean, I'm with you.
I expected as much, Mike. I expected as much from you.
Yeah. I always love dunking on UVA, as you know.
Mike, I am not the only one here that has offseason hot takes about about a team in the ACC. What do you got for me here?
I think Miami's got the best coaching staff in the ACC. I don't think that's that hot of a take, really.
You know, honestly, it's not. You very well might be right there. I think if nothing else, like, there's some shock value to that. Because, Mike, like two episodes ago, we were talking about Miami not having a staff at all, and now, a month later, they have the best in the conference? Like, how could that be right? And yet...
I mean, Mario Cristobal is definitively the second head coach in this conference. Definitively. Like, he steps in right behind Dabo. I don't think there is another head coach in this conference that you could definitively put as the second best head coach right now.
I mean, there is quite the motley crew of head coaches in this conference right now. So we could argue of, should there be someone that competes for second best in the conference behind Dabo against Cristobal? But I believe as we sit here and talk about it, no, you're probably right. That's pretty clear cut number two in the conference.
I mean, yeah, I mean, Cristobal comes in and I think he's a top 10 head coach in the sport personally. So I think he's stepping in and maybe I'm wrong about that take. I don't know. I think he's like within like the 5 to 10 range in terms of college football coaches.
Back half of the top 10. Yeah.
Yeah. Back half of the top 10. So he's stepping into a situation at Miami where there's not a shortage of talent, right? Certainly not a shortage of talent. He's in an area and an environment that he knows very well. And he has not recruited there in quite some time, but he knows the area well. He has put together a staff that knows that area, right? So most recently, he hires linebackers coach Charlie Strong, who has a lot of experience in the South Florida area and is known to be a very good recruiter. And he is a very good defensive mind, right? And I know he's had kind of a weird career, but he's also had a very successful career at a lot of his stops. Mm-hmm. He has, by and large, for a majority of his career, been a very good football coach. And I don't think there's really any disputing that. I don't care what you think of his Texas tenure. He's been a very good coach for a majority of his career. Mm-hmm. So he is now coaching linebackers. You have Kevin Steele as a defensive coordinator, who I think is a very good addition. Mm-hmm. You have Josh Gattis, who just won the Broyles Award at Michigan, coming down to coach your offense. And you have Mario Cristobal at the head. And that's before you get into special teams hires, offensive line. They've put together a staff that can recruit the hell out of South Florida. And there is a ton of talent in the Miami area. And Miami has done a very good job of retaining that talent in recent years. But they could do an even better job with this staff. They can take recruiting to a different level with this staff, Joey. They've put together top 10, top 15 recruiting classes pretty consistently. I think they could probably put together top 10 classes more consistently now. Mm-hmm. Could they get a couple classes in the top five? You know, can they be the top class in the ACC? You know, can they beat out Clemson? You know, can they at least get to two and beat out Carolina? Carolina's been doing really well on the recruiting trail the last couple of years, but there's no reason Carolina should be out recruiting Miami. I mean, they shouldn't be doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And Miami in the last couple of years has taken a backseat to Carolina. That can't happen, right? So even though Miami's done a decent job on the trail, they can do an even better job. And this hire, Joey, is not, and the staff, we talked about Miami, and we've always talked about there's a shortage of talent at Miami. There's no reason why Miami shouldn't be competing in the Coastal every year.
Yep.
And winning the Coastal most year, the talent that they have. It's because very frequently they have the most talent in the Coastal. Mm-hmm. That's never been the issue. It's been culture. It's been culture, culture, culture. They haven't been able to establish it, mm-hmm. right? They haven't been able to get back to the culture they had when they were winning all those championships in the early 2000s. They don't have that culture anymore.
Right.
And college football has changed a lot, right? And there are more, you know, there's more money in it than there ever has been. And there's NIL and there's a million different variables you didn't have to consider, you know, 20 plus years ago when they were competing for national championships. Mm-hmm. But there's no reason why Miami can't be a team that's coming out of the Coastal each and every year. I think they now have a staff put together with Cristobal as the best coach in the Coastal, in my opinion. A staff that he's put together that's the best in the conference, in my opinion, when you consider what Clemson has lost, right? All the guys they've lost off their staff. You lose Elliott, you lose Venables, you lose a bunch of assistants. Dabo's promoting from within. We'll see how that goes. A lot of questions at Clemson from a coaching staff standpoint. Not as many questions at Miami now. Weird to say because we're used to questioning Miami up and down, but this Hurricane staff is the best. It's the best staff in the ACC. It's better than Florida State's. It's better than Virginia Tech's. It's better than Georgia Tech's, Louisville's, you name it. It's better than Clemson's. Like, this is a very impressive staff that Cristobal has put together. I don't think it's a hot take. Listen, that doesn't mean that Miami's going to win the ACC next fall. Let's walk before we run. But what I'm saying is that this is a really impressive staff he's put together. I think it's going to recruit very well. I think it's going to change the culture. I think it's going to be a team that now consistently wins the Coastal and consistently, you know, gets back to competing at a level where they can play for four quarters of Clemson, which they can consistently beat Florida State. Peyton Norvell's doing this rebuild and he's making improvements, but Miami, Florida State's going to matter again, I think, at some point in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Like, that rivalry is going to matter because I think Norvell's got Florida State on the right track. So that rivalry is going to matter again. Miami's going to be competing in the Coastal with Cristobal and the staff he's put together. At least for now, I think they're the best staff in the ACC.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there is something to be said from a head coaching standpoint, depending on your criteria of Mack Brown. I mean, that's the only other guy in the ACC that has a national title under his belt. But
if you
want to talk about what he's done as a head coach in the last 8 years, well, four or five of them he spent in the commentating booth, you know. And
Right.
His time at North Carolina has seemed pretty promising a couple times, but they've yet to really properly get over the top. So
agree. And I don't think anybody at this stage of Mack Brown's career, I don't think anybody has taken Mack Brown or Cristobal.
No, probably not. I mean, they have really taken their recruiting to an impressive level. And I mean, he's clearly just a very likable, good recruiter, Mike. I mean, it makes sense why North Carolina would go from struggling to get a top 30 class to consistently
where they are
top
now.
10 classes. It's just, it's a Mack Brown effect, right?
Absolutely.
But anyways, I kind of agree with you. Miami is set up to do really well. And I think Cristobal, I mean, the last time he was in South Florida, you know, 10 years ago as the head coach at, what was it, FIU, I believe?
FIU, yeah.
I mean, he's 10 years younger. I think that was pre-time with Saban. It's FIU, which historically has done a pretty poor job of investing in their program and, you know, giving coaches resources to work with. So I think there's really only so much that can be taken from there. But, I mean, if you saw what he did at Oregon, I mean, if he can do most of that at Miami with that coaching staff, I mean, they'll be one of the best, if not the best team in the Coastal Division, pretty much year in, year out. You're correct. And I think they have the people to do it. You know, one of the things that has come out in the last couple weeks, news wise, is he hired his linebackers coach. That was Charlie Strong, former Louisville and Texas and South Florida head coach, who is known for, as much as anything, A, runs really good defenses, and he's not just a position coach, so there's that, but B, he recruits the state of Florida and the southern part of Florida especially really, really well.
Yep.
Do you wonder how Teddy Bridgewater and Devontae Parker and some guys like that left the state of Florida to go up to play for Louisville? That would be Charlie Strong. Charlie Strong's boys, you know, so it is a little bit of a juggernaut staff that Cristobal is putting together at Miami relative to what's going on around them. I mean, for sure, that is a stacked staff, which is just, it's crazy to say when a month ago, again, like they basically didn't have a staff. They just had Cristobal. And yet here we are.
Yeah. And I think too, like people have been, and rightfully so, right? I'm not saying the jokes are without merit, but people have always cracked jokes about, oh, God, great, the media is going to pick Miami again. Is the U back? Is it, you know? But they haven't had a staff like this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They had Mark Richt, who, you know, Richt's a good coach. And they had Mark Richt, and that worked out really well for a year. And then worked out not so good for the other two. It was just okay, right? And Miami didn't get back to where they wanted to go. And Richt, you know, clearly had flaws. And I just look at Cristobal and what he was able to do at Oregon. He's got experience. He's a Miami alum. He's got experience in the state of Florida. And I've mentioned this. We talked about on the podcast we dropped right when he was hired. If this doesn't work, I don't know what Miami does. This checks all the boxes on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. If they can't get this right, I don't know what they do. Cristobal's a great hire. Cristobal's a great football coach. If he doesn't work at Miami, I don't have a clue what they do from here. No idea.
Two things here, Mike. Number one, Louisville fans are very likely very pissed at me right now because Devontae Parker is not from South Florida. He is from Louisville, Kentucky. He is a hometown boy. I messed that up. He played professional football in Miami.
For the Dolphins.
Yes, for the Dolphins, but collegiately at, you know, and high schooly, whatever, at, you know, in Louisville. So, but point is, Teddy Bridgewater and several others from those teams under Strong were from South Florida and were just Florida at large. So there is that. Second thing, Mike, slight bit of a this is like a lukewarm take at best, I will say, to kind of piggyback on yours. I believe that Mario Cristobal and his staff are going to hit a glass ceiling at Miami. I suspect that he will elevate that program, but I do not think you're going to see much of anything better than like a 10-2 regular season from them basically ever. And the reason I say that is go back and look at his tenure at Oregon and realize that for the majority of that time, he had a talent advantage over almost everybody that they played, certainly over basically the rest of the conference. And yet they lost 1-2 games a
weird
year
one.
That were kind of head scratcher, weird losses.
Yep.
So is Cristobal better than Manny Diaz, than Mark Richt, than Al Golden, than, you know, take your pick of recent
Randy
Miami
Shannon.
Head coaches, Randy Shannon? Yes. Is Mario Cristobal the silver bullet that is going to win you a national title at Miami? No. No, he is not, in my mind. So that's my thought, is that he will elevate the program, but he will hit a glass ceiling. That's my lukewarm Cristobal take at Miami.
He does have a tendency to lose a random one.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, Miami fans are... Even in the 10-win season with Mark Richt, you know, they lost a random one.
2019 is the perfect example too. Like that was the year they lost the opener in Dallas to true freshman first game out of high school Bo Nix in Auburn.
Yep.
In a weird one, and then later that year they were ranked mid top 10, and they go in and lose to freshman Jaden Daniels in Arizona State.
Yep.
Won the Rose Bowl, finished 12-2. That's great, but weren't in position to make the playoff or win the national title. So
that was first year head coach Herm Edwards, was it not?
I believe it was.
Or did Herm Edwards come in? Yeah. Or did Herm Edwards come in when Daniels was a sophomore? I can't remember. But that's a weird one to lose.
Second season, actually. He started in 2018, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. So. Weird.
But yeah, that's my take. Lukewarm, I'll say.
Yeah, it's lukewarm. I think I mostly agree with that.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough, Mike. Anything else on Miami while we are mildly roasting them, I guess? We're not really roast at all. I don't know.
Oh, I don't think we roast them.
While we're riffing on our Miami takes.
Yeah, we said that Cristobal will go 10-2 a lot. Okay. It's better than going 7-5 a lot, what they've been doing.
Way better. Way better.
Yeah.
Mike, I have one more hot take that I'm going to drop here. But before we do that.
Hot. It's a hot take, too. This one's hot.
Fairly spicy. Fairly spicy, yeah. I think. Maybe, you know, it's arguably spicier than the first one. Anyways.
It's on the Paige Spiranek scale of hot.
I don't know who that is, Mike, so you know, you'll have to enlighten me later.
Okay, well, you do the ad read, and I'll enlighten you.
Mike, we got to remind the people about section103.com. It is the internet's best place to go and buy Georgia Tech athletic apparel and just general Georgia Tech wear. I posted a tweet. We're recording this the evening of February the 27th. I posted a tweet earlier today that I had gone to the Houston Rodeo yesterday, and it was like 40 degrees and rainy outside. It's just absolutely gross. And if that sounds like you should be miserable, Mike, you should. That is correct. But I wore my Section 103 hoodie, and it kept me very warm, kept me very dry. It was awesome. And so I cannot thank them enough. They were really great. I don't know if you knew this either, Mike. It is now baseball and softball season. And Section 103 has a couple of shirts out with the script jackets on it that the baseball and softball team both wear.
Yeah, let's make it clear. It is college baseball season, but the MLB owners don't want to ever play baseball again.
Very specifically college baseball season and softball season, yes. Yeah, no, it's absolutely great stuff. Cannot thank them enough for their partnership here. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order over at section103.com. They have t-shirts, they have sweatshirts, hoodies. They've got things with all the proper Georgia Tech word marks on them. They've got shirts and such with the official Tech gold. That's their color. They've got the ATL logo. The performance wear is incredibly soft and comfortable. The proper t-shirts are actually really super soft. I mean, I just high quality stuff. Cannot recommend it enough. Really appreciate those who have gone and supported Steven and the gang over there. We appreciate it. He appreciates it. And we appreciate him for his partnership.
Yep. He's the man.
Absolutely.
And he made it very clear that picture you took at the rodeo, he's like, I did not pay for this. Like, fair enough.
No, he didn't pay for it. I just honestly really like their stuff. So
yep.
Go check them
out there.
Promo code GOACC, 10% off your first order, section103.com. Mike, you have texted me information on Paige Sporanic.
I have.
I know of this Instagram account. I'm playing dumb, acting like I don't. Anyways, go check it out for yourself if you want to.
I most probably already have.
Mike, I think we've seen the last national title at Clemson under Dabo.
That's unbelievable.
Is it?
Maybe not.
Here's my thought.
Okay.
So Clemson, obviously has won, what, two or three? Two, I think. Just
they've
one.
Won.
One for
they've
Deshaun,
won two.
One for Trevor.
They've won two. They've been to three. They went to two with Deshaun.
Okay. By all means, over the entire playoff era, they've made the playoff every year except for the first year and this most recent year. Like, they had like a 6-year streak of making the playoff every single year and, you know, being there in the dance at the end. So why would I say this? You know, so you referenced earlier in the podcast, Brent Venables, defensive coordinator, leaving to go to Oklahoma. We talked about Tony Elliott, offensive coordinator, leaving to go to Virginia. A few staffers leaving with Venables to go to Oklahoma with him. So, Mike, who steps up into these roles for Dabo Swinney and Clemson? It's a bunch of internal hires.
Yeah.
Bunch of internal hires are promoting from within. Mike, we've talked about that before, specifically in the context of Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente and some of the hires that he made. I don't like that. I think some internal hires and internal promotions are good. I think if it's entirely that, you're missing something. Like, you are overlooking good candidates.
I agree with the overall premise. I will say I'd rather be making internal hires on a staff that has been consistently winning for like a decade
mm-hmm.
versus making internal hires if you're a Justin Fuente or I don't know if Jeff Collins has done this, but like Jeff Collins, yeah, struggling, trying to find their way. Right, just Fuente.
Even Jeff Collins doesn't do this.
That's good. That's good. Justin Fuente's Twitter was hacked recently, so now he has no profile picture and just a cover photo of him with his kids. So
lovely.
I'm not even sure he's aware of that, so somebody let him know. But
well, he's
anyway.
Listening to the show right now, so he'll figure that out.
I mean, if we got to add somebody to the fold, maybe it's Justin Fuente. I don't know if he'll want to go back and listen to any of our previous podcasts if he wants to join the show. But anyway, the internal hires thing, though, like if you're going to make internal hires, I think you make them off a staff that's consistently won. Now, with that being said, we don't know anything about these guys,
mm-hmm.
right? We don't know how good they're going to be. But devil's advocate, Dabo brought in Brent Venables, who was fired from Oklahoma. Literally fired as a defensive coordinator from Oklahoma. He brings in Brent Venables and resurrects his career, right?
Well,
so
the weirdest part of that story is he brings him in to replace Kevin Steele, who he fired, who are now lauding as like one of the better defensive coordinators in the country, who just got hired on at Miami. Like,
yeah, just talked about him in the context of Miami staff, what a good hire it is.
Yeah.
So
weird timeline.
There's both sides, a weird timeline, and there's, I guess what I'm saying is there's two sides to the coin here, right? Like Dabo's made external hires before that made you scratch your head and they end up working out fine, right? Or you fire Kevin Steele and you're like, what the hell are you doing? And then Venables comes in and he's a million times better than you could have ever imagined Kevin Steele was going to be at Clemson, right? Mm-hmm. So who knows? The question, the jury's out, right? The jury is out on what this staff is going to do at Clemson. The reason why I personally don't want to write them off just yet is because I think Jeff Scott is going to lose his job at South Florida pretty soon. I think when he does that, there's a prime landing spot for him on back on the Clemson staff with Dabo Swinney.
Oh.
Now that's a weird, I know it's kind of a weird prediction. It's like, how do you know he's going to land there? I mean, the reason why Jeff Scott was getting head coaching jobs in the first place is because he was on Dabo Swinney's staff. Wouldn't it be a fine spot for him to go resurrect his career? Like we joke about the Nick Saban school for like troubled boys, so to speak, where like you get fired and then you just go and hang out with Nick Saban for a couple of years on his staff and kind of like quote unquote learn the trade and repair your image, and then you end up with a really cushy job somewhere else. Like take Bill O'Brien, for example. Mm-hmm. They were talking about him joining the Patriots staff as an offensive coordinator potentially, which I don't think is going to happen now, but that was thrown out there. There's, you know, Steve Sarkisian, Lane Kiffin, like go down the list, right? Go down the list of guys who have joined Nick Saban. Why wouldn't Jeff Scott go back to, if he were to lose his job at South Florida, maybe they end up being better than I think they will be in his third year.
Mike, but this is like Clemson on levels of conspiracy theory. This is awesome. I love this.
Well, I mean, think about it though. Like, wouldn't it make sense for Jeff Scott to go back to Clemson if he gets fired from South Florida? Why wouldn't he?
It would. And by the way, the term Clemson on is now trademark of Basketball Conference Podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we made our money. For anybody who wants to know why Joey and I ever quit our jobs, because we got a trademark on that, made t-shirts or something, and they went viral.
We will sell the NFT to it though, if anybody wants to buy.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's an inside joke for another time for the rest of you. But I'm not personally ready to write off Clemson yet. There are a lot of questions. A lot mm-hmm. of questions. We don't know anything about the staff.
We'll see. This is the thing I was thinking about too, though, is like when we say writing off Clemson, like what does that mean?
What I
said in my take is I don't believe that they're going to win another national title under Dabo, which in most ways is just like the most lukewarm of takes. Like, I don't think Nebraska is going to win a national title under Scott Frost. Like, that's not a hot take. That's a fact,
right?
You know, like,
right.
You know, for most teams, like, you know, there's very few teams that we could expect to even get close to this, you know? So,
right.
But what I'm saying is I think Clemson's going to continue to be really good. They're going to continue to recruit their tails off, you know, be like a top eight roster quality team in the country. That'll all be great. It's just Brent Venables was so special there for so long. Like, if you think you're just going to replace him and what he was able to do with that defense and not only recruiting them, but coaching and scheming and the play calling and the adjustments and all that stuff. If you think you can fix all that by hiring somebody from an internal role, I would ask you, why was that person still in an internal role? Why didn't somebody else hire them to be their defensive coordinator? Right? Like, if anybody is that good, offensively, we have watched since Jeff Scott left. Again, we have watched the offense slowly kind of go from super well-oiled machine that put up 44 points on Bama in the national title game a few years ago to less effective, you know? a team that
much less effective
does less with more, you know, in a lot of ways. And so, again, I mean, they still went like 10-2 this year or whatever it was. Like, that's fine, but
they did.
But that's not going to get you over the top. And I think maybe the hotter take is that, you know, I could kind of pick a number here, but it's like, if Dabo is here for the rest of the decade, I would suspect that they end the decade with no more than like 7 ACC titles, which sounds like, you know, wow, damn, if you can win 7 out of 10, like it's pretty good, but
it's preposterous. That would mean that he has won like 16 or 17 conference titles.
But that's the point, is they just came off a run of 6 in a row. We saw them, you know, this is the first time in the history of this podcast this year that somebody else won it. But what I'm saying is that they are going to be more vulnerable to the point that they are not going to win the ACC title year in, year out. Like, it's just clockwork. I think it's going to come back down to earth just enough to where they are less invincible, less on a pedestal. I don't think that it's, and it's the coaching staff, but it's also, Mike, this continued refusal to really like willingly participate within the transfer portal.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to have to change his stance on that. If
you
I
thought,
agree.
I thought he was going to be a ceiling.
Right. I mean, there's going to be a ceiling if he doesn't. I guess what I'm curious is, do you think they're going to take a step back from elite to just being good or really good, I guess?
That's,
I guess, kind of what you're saying, right?
That's kind of what I'm saying is, like, unless, you know, instead of win totals every year of 11.5, I think you're going to have win totals of 10 or something like that.
Right.
You know, like a lot more 10-2 seasons than 12-0 seasons, something like
that. Do you think you'd be having the same take if Clemson won the ACC this year?
If it was just like, and I'd have to remember exactly the way that the season unfolded, but if it was like they just sort of backed their way into the conference championship game.
Okay. And, all right. So how'd they do it? Okay.
Yeah. Like if they continued looking dominant, I would not be making these takes.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So it's more of a recency. It's a, I don't want to call it recency bias because it happened. They were not as good this year. So it's not a bias. It's how it went down. Lack of a better term. Recency bias.
Yeah.
Plus losing the assistants.
Yep. It's those. And then the other thing I'm considering too is the thing that we've talked about on this show before is they won those two national titles with quarterbacks named Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. And if, again,
yeah,
if I ask you to start listing off who are the best quarterbacks in college football over the last decade, I'm not sure you would have that, you know, the fingers up on both hands before you had said both Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence, right? Like,
I mean, they're in the top five. They're in the top three. They're probably in the top three or four. Like,
yeah, there's been some good ones. I mean, certainly both top 10, probably even, you know, fewer than that are better than one or both of them.
Yep.
And the point is, like, again, we talked about this with DJU. Like, you can be good or really good without being generationally great, and you'll see that in the performance. And so what's the likelihood that they're going to get another guy at Trevor or Deshaun's level?
Is Cade Klubnik that guy?
I mean, we were asking the same thing 2 years ago with DJU, and he's kind of seems like he's not, you know?
Right, right. I mean, and he looked like he was going to be that guy when we had the COVID season, and he went into South Bend and threw for 500 yards or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, okay.
I was sold, man. Like,
I'm like, Clemson will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about Clemson. No, Notre Dame won that game. We're all talking about, oh, okay, let's start taking Notre Dame. Now, they, you know, again, Trevor Lawrence didn't play, but we were all saying, let's not discount this Notre Dame win too much because DJU is really freaking good. And then this year he wasn't. So where did they go from here?
Exactly. So that's what I'm saying is it's not that like Clemson's all of a sudden going to be a 6-6, 7-5 kind of team. I'm not saying that.
Right.
What I am saying is that I think between the ability that they have to put together a roster while not taking transfers to fill holes and fill gaps, plus the way that the assistants have kind of gotten broken up and the way that they went about replacing them tells me that they are coming back down to earth just a little bit. They're probably, you know, probably the best program still in the ACC, but not nearly as invincible as they have been over the last several years. And I don't think they're going to be able to get over the top, you know, not as consistently making the playoff. I don't think we're going to see him win another national title. I'm calling it right now, Mike. That's my hot take.
Okay.
Your tone tells me you disagree.
I don't. There's too many out. It's hard to definitively make that statement when I don't know how good these assistants are.
I also look forward to the news on like Thursday that Clemson is taking four transfers or something ridiculous like that. But
I mean, that would be, I think that's a hotter take than the one you just laid out, that Clemson's going to take four transfers.
I mean, but it would be so easy just to basically flip that switch. Yeah, you know what? We will take transfers now. And
Listen, if they don't start taking transfers, they're going to have issues. Like, if they don't start taking transfers, they're going to have issues to the point where Dabo Swinney is going to be on his way out at Clemson. Mm-hmm. I will say that. And if you think that's bold, I mean, we are in an era now of college football free agency. And until further notice, there are two types of recruiting. There's recruiting high school prospects that Clemson's very, very good at. Then there's recruiting the transfer portal, which you better get good at, because players just leave the portal. They go into the portal now and they're gone. You got to recruit those guys on your roster. I know it sounds ridiculous, but you got to keep recruiting them and show them why Clemson is the best place for them to be. Because if Dabo doesn't start doing that, then he's going to have a lot of that talent that he's recruited that isn't playing very often. They're going to leave. And then Clemson's got a depth issue, Joey,
mm-hmm.
because you can only keep up so often with recruiting when guys keep flocking out the door. Mm-hmm. It's the issue Justin Fuente had at Virginia Tech, and he wasn't recruiting nearly at the level that Dabo is or has. So you got to,
as they say,
you got to recruit both sides.
There's recruiting out of high school, and there's randomly messaging dudes on Instagram to see if they can enter the transfer portal or not. There's two types of recruiting.
Yep. Yep. And you better get good at both.
Some call it tampering. I call it recruiting. I don't know. Who's to say?
Tampering is just, it's only tampering if you get caught.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's the spirit. Yeah, and that's just, that's kind of where I'm at with it, is I think I kind of want you to keep going a little bit with the take that if they don't start taking transfers, that Dabo is going to be on his way out of Clemson. Like, you think they're going to fire him?
I think they're going to have depth issues. I don't think they're going to win as much.
So what does on his way out of Clemson mean?
On his way out means that he's going to be a victim of his own success, right? I'm talking like the Frank Beamer effect.
Mm.
That's what I'm talking about, where mm-hmm. it's like, man, you've been so good for so long. Why aren't you as good anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know why. Because your talent keeps leaving in the transfer portal and you refuse to bring guys in.
You can't replenish Dabo's, it.
He's not going to be able to replenish it at the rate that he's going to need to, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of it is not going to be Dabo's fault from a transfer portal standpoint with guys leaving. Guys are just going to leave. You're seeing it at really good programs right now.
Mm-hmm.
Guys tend to leave. Guys leave Georgia. Guys are leaving Georgia after the national championship going to play for Bama.
Yeah.
Why? Why are you doing that? You just started in the national championship game for the team that won. Now you're transferring to Bama? Kids are going to transfer.
You got that Instagram DM.
Right? It's like, yeah, Saban reached out to a high school coach. High school coach is like, hey, heard from Coach Saban. You can never prove that paper trail, right?
Yeah.
You never prove that paper trail. But no, that's what I'm saying. Like, kids are going to transfer regardless. You can do everything right, right? You can win a national title. You can have a player starting in the national title game, right? Mm-hmm. And having a good game. And then transferring to the team you just beat
mm-hmm.
in conference.
Yeah.
That's the era we're in, is my point. Kids are going to transfer. Dabo can run a great program. He can keep winning like 10, 11 games. Kids are going to transfer. He needs to figure out the portal.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to figure out the portal. Exactly. And it'll be easy for him, Joey, once he decides he wants to do it, because he's been recruiting well his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
He can recruit. There's no question about it. He can recruit, and he knows how to at least delegate. People talk about X's and O's. Is he a good coach? Look, you don't win multiple national championships without having an inkling, right? He knows what he's doing. There's too much of this like, oh, it's all Venables, it's all Elliott and Scott. The best head coaches in college football have really good assistants
mm-hmm.
on their staff, right? Like, Jim Harbaugh doesn't get to college football playoff this past year with Josh Gattis, right? No question right. about it. So I can only assign so much like blame or take credit from a head coach so much. He's hiring these guys,
mm-hmm.
right? He's hiring these guys. You got to give him credit. He got these guys on staff. This isn't basketball. You're not a manager in baseball, right? Where like, you're the one making all those decisions, right?
Yeah.
You got football is so different in the amount of coaches on staff than any other sport.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it so unique.
Mm-hmm.
So point being, when Dabo decides that he's going to make the transfer portal an integral part of what they do, they're going to continue to perform well, in my opinion. If he decides I'm not doing the transfer portal, he's going to be left in the dust.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be left in the dust. Everybody's recruiting the portal now.
Slowly but surely. That's kind of what's slowly starting to happen.
So that's the way the sport's trending. And you either adapt or you get left behind. It's the same reason why Nick Saban, this is a different conversation, but it's the same reason why Nick Saban changed the way that his offenses played, changed the type of coordinators he was hiring. Nick Saban, much like Kirby Smart, would love for it to be like a 14-10 game. He just the shit out of somebody for like 3.5 hours. That's how he wants to win games. But he saw the way college football was trending. Oh, these offenses are going to spread you out. You know, for 4 quarters, you know, it's going to be air raid and you're going to have to, you know, defend the perimeter more than you ever had before. That's not the way Alabama's offenses used to be run. Mark Ingram, Trent Richardson, like early 2010s, Eddie Lacy. That's not how these Alabama offenses used to operate.
Nope.
They never operated that way.
Mm-hmm.
But now they're, you know, then they get, you know, you start to see it with McCarron and then Tua and, you know, Jalen Hurts. Like, you see these guys come in and you know, you're seeing it now with Bryce Young. Like, they're throwing it all over the field. And Nick Saban said, I had to adapt the way I ran the offense or I was going to be left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a great coach for that reason. Dabo, we've talked about in the Nick Saban conversation, right? After he won the second national championship, we said, this guy is the only guy that we've seen. Now we can add Kirby Smart to the conversation. But Dabo's the only guy that we've seen that can crack the Nick Saban code, right? In the biggest game, the biggest moment, can crack the Nick Saban code in the national championship. You can add Kirby to the list now. We got it done. But Dabo was in that conversation. We won the second one. We're like, this guy can beat Saban consistently or enough, consistently enough to be in that conversation as one of the best college coaches in the history of the sport. That's the kind of conversations we were having a few years ago.
Yep.
Does Dabo want to continue to be in that conversation or not? That's that's going to be up to him. He's going to have to adapt the way that Saban has adapted over the course of his career in a different way with the portal rather than on field schematically.
And I think it's that struggle to adapt, that insistence on continuing to run the program and operate the way that you have and the way that brought you success. Like, you know, to be fair, that insistence, I think ultimately top to bottom, the way you hire, the way you recruit, the way that you do everything, that to me is what is going to bring Clemson back down to earth. So the moment that that Dabo decides, you know what, maybe the transfer portal is not so bad and maybe we can help fix our roster and improve our team by bringing in guys on the transfer portal.
Yep.
A lot of that changes.
Yeah.
The moment that he looks out and says, you know, maybe these guys that we hired internally and that have been part of our program for so long, maybe that's not the very best that we could do in terms of play callers or position coaches. Maybe we should bring in somebody from the outside again, like we did with Brent Venables.
And Dabo is so insistent on culture, which is good. Mm-hmm. That's what you want. But it's to a fault now.
It's important.
It's important. It's very important. You see a lot of programs lose their way when they go away from their culture and kind of what's made them successful in the past. You see programs lose their way. Virginia Tech's a great example of that. Mm-hmm. They lost their way with Fuente. They're hiring Pry, a former Virginia Tech guy, to come in and reinstill that culture. Dabo built the Clemson football culture. He has built that program from the ground up. He comes in for Terry Bowden as an interim. He gets the head coaching job. He's built that championship culture there. And he is so insistent on maintaining culture because he's done it one way his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
That's made him successful to his credit. But the best coaches in the sport, they adapt. Nick Saban adapted, right? I keep going back to that. He adapted.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, culture is important to Nick Saban too, right?
Oh yeah.
He always talks about leadership and culture and he does all these offseason like leadership thing, you know, goes and speaks and motivational speaker, all that stuff. Like culture is so important, right? And you don't want Dabo to lose his way because he's done it one way his entire career, and that's been successful.
Right. Exactly. Mike, that's all I got on Clemson. Anything else?
I think we're good. We said it would be like a 40-minute podcast. I think we went an hour.
Yeah, hour and five as I watch it right now.
There we go.
as could be expected, we went way longer than expected. Mike, anything else before we work on getting out of here? Do you have any other hot takes you want to just like news dump on the way out?
No, I'm good.
You know, I had mentioned, by the way, that I think Tony Elliott gets fired within 4 years. I also think Jeff Collins is going to get fired within 4 years from now. That's
make sure to sneak that in.
A less than hot take, we'll say. But, you know, time will tell. I could be wrong on that, too. I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, that'd be great. That'd be great news for you if he wasn't fired.
It would. I mean,
within 4 years, that means he's turned it around. Because by 4 years from now, the buyout's under control. You can pay the buyout in 4 years.
Look, I realize that's like a 95% chance that he turns it around. But there's that 5% yes. that they just there's just some sort of administrative incompetence from Georgia Tech that like, I am horrendously terrified to.
That's fair. I was going more with the 95% angle.
Yeah.
But that's fine. The 5% angle would be much, I mean, well, it wouldn't be funnier for you. It'd be much funnier for somebody who doesn't really give a shit like me. That'd be much funnier. Yeah. That's like, okay, well, outside observer, it's much funnier.
All right. That's all I got. Anything. You want to work on getting out of here?
Yes.
Let's do that. Mike, the people can come find us on Twitter. And by the way, next episode, once again, confirming this, will be a tell us about your team episode. We've got to get that series started and going, and I'm really, really hoping that we are going to do that and learn about the Virginia Cavaliers and kind of what makes that a tough job and why my take on Tony Elliott is wrong. So
let's start there.
That seems like the right place to start. So we have someone lined up. We just got to make the schedule work out and hope that they don't back out on us and you know, hate me now that I have talked some mess about their program.
Now they'll probably be more interested in jumping on now.
There you
go. I
would
think.
Tell me why I'm wrong. Please do. Come on.
Yeah.
Mike, we're on Twitter. I'm at FGRSJoey. He's at Mike McDaniel SI. Together we're at BC Podcast ACC. You can send us an email with questions, comments, concerns, anything you want to learn about Virginia. Hey, send it to the longest email address known to man, basketballconferencepodcast@gmail.com.
Nailed it.
Thank you. You can find us on iTunes, on Spotify, all the places you normally go to find podcasts. Where else can they find us in the social medias, Mike?
Facebook.com/basketballconference. Rate, review, find all of our podcasts there, Joe.
Please do. Please do. We appreciate those who have. Mike, that's all I got. Anything else?
No, we'll try to make it less than 2 weeks before we record again. I'm on the mend. So
I was going to say, you got to try really hard to not get bronchitis and strep and the flu and everything else all at the same time again. So
yes,
you general, work on that.
Generally just felt like death.
Work on that. I wish you the best of health. So, you know, keep people updated on how you're feeling.
Yeah, we'll do. There I can do that.
All right, Mike. That's all I got. You want to come back and talk some more ACC football here in the coming days and weeks?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but we'll figure it out then.
Ask me about your team or whatever.
There you go. We'll talk about that. How about that?
Yeah. There you go.
Learn about your arch nemesis, Virginia Cavaliers.
Hell yeah.
Because as we say, Mike, the soundboard is not up, so I can't say Virginia's
okay.
Awesome.
Virginia's awesome.
There you go.
That's what I say.
There you go. All right. Well, until next time, for Mr. Mike McDaniel, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again soon. Until next time, go ACC.